Well, friends, we are about to embark on a series that I'm so excited about and ready to get into, and I'm calling it The Goat on the Cow. And we're not going to get to said goat and cow until next Sunday, but over the course of this series, I want to explore wonder, awe, enchantment. I want to get at a phenomenon that I think we have all experienced in life, those moments where we notice or sense or feel something mysterious, maybe even haunting. Those moments that leave us wondering, what does that mean? Moments maybe when it felt like we bumped into something more, like a coincidence perhaps, or maybe some kind of moment that felt like an inexplicable phenomenon, or maybe it's something so beautiful that it felt meaningful in a way you can't fully describe, something that made us feel like there's something more or beyond just our five senses. My guess is we've all been left asking at one time or another, what do those experiences mean? And here's the thing, even if you don't believe in God, maybe you're a hardened skeptic, I'm still hoping that you'll join me on this journey through this series, because I'm inclined to think that even for those of us who don't believe, it's hard not to feel a sense of enchantment or wonder sometimes. I mean, it's hard not to be right, like under a canopy of stars or out in the beautiful woods, and at times not have this feeling like, is there something more? So here's what I want to do this morning. I want to tell you three stories. And for each story, I want you to consider what you would say to the person in the story if they asked you what their experience meant. And so as you hear the stories, keep that in mind. You're going to be asked by these people what exactly their experience meant. What would your response be? And then what I want to do is I want to take us to some scripture passages before telling you another story. Except this story is going to be about you. And I want to ask you after that story, what does it mean? Now, this might sound confusing in the moment, but hang with me. Here we go. Story one. Paul Vasquez had always lived a quiet, simple life. He was a lifelong nature lover, and the California wilderness to him had always been home. But after his children were grown up, he ended up becoming divorced, and so he was single, and he decided that he was going to move to the Yosemite region and live on this humble abode on the side of a mountain just outside of Yosemite Park. And there he grew his own food. He only worked when he needed to. In fact, he lived most years off of just $6,000 a year. He had opted to live a simple life in solitude. He was simply content to wake up every morning to one of the most magnificent views in all of California. But the simple, reclusive man would become famous overnight. In January of 2010, he stepped out of his home and noticed something. There on the horizon in front of him were two full rainbows stretched across the entirety of the horizon. The awesome sight was so electrifying to him that he picked up his camera, hoping to capture the moment. Now, the video is grainy, and so the splendor of the rainbows is kind of lost on the viewer. Instead, what Paul really captured was a firsthand account of what it is like to be moved by wonder, to notice what seems like, in the moment, some kind of inexplicable phenomenon. And with this video, Double Rainbow Man emerged as a viral sensation. Now, I sent the video to you in the Nexus Weekly, but I want to play it for you now, just a minute and 30 seconds of it, because pay careful attention here. I want to unpack this in detail. I think it points to something fascinating. This is Double Rainbow Man. Take a look.
Whoa, that's a full rainbow all the way. Double rainbow. Oh my God. It's a double rainbow all the way. Whoa, that's so intense. Whoa, man. Wow. Whoa. 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 Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. Woo. Oh wow. Woo. Yeah. Oh my. Oh my God, look at that. It's starting to even look like a triple rainbow. Oh my God, it's full on double rainbow all the way across the sky. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh God. What does this mean?
Oh. I find this clip just absolutely mesmerizing. I can't tell you how many times I have watched it, and I wasn't alone. Within days, the video had racked up millions of views, and to date, it has 48.5 million views and still counting. Now, many, of course, thought Paul was high on the video and he was just tripping out on this rainbow, but he would go on to say later this: I was not high on the video. I simply saw God and put it on YouTube. So I want to break this video down for us because it captures to me something profound. The star of the video, it wasn't the rainbows, but it was the man behind the camera, the man we never see. And what we observed in the moment was a rare occurrence of someone noticing something splendid and being blown away by a sense of wonder. Now, we're not there. We aren't having the same experience that Paul is having. For us, we're chuckling. It's funny to hear this guy. But for Paul, he's caught up in something. It's something that it seems only he can see or feel or experience, and it leaves him enraptured. And so as the video unfolds, we sort of have these four sort of layers to it. We first get a quiet sort of awe from Paul upon noticing the rainbow. It's like this quiet taking his breath away, but it unfolds into a second phase of the video. And when he sees the full scope of the rainbows, Paul erupts into this rapturous celebration of just pure joy. He's shouting, he's hollering, he can hardly contain himself. But the second wave sort of gives way to a third. And that's finally the moment so overtakes him that he begins to cry. The beauty of what he's seeing moves him to weep. And then finally, and most important for me, that phase moves to this final stage, this moment of inspiration by Paul. He simply whispers into the camera, "What does it mean?" And it's a question he'll repeat later in the video. He says, "This is too much. What does it mean?" So, what does it mean? I mean, I want you to consider that question for a moment. Imagine you're standing with Paul Vasquez and these rainbows are in front of you, and in his wonder, he whispers to you, "What does this mean? What does it mean that he saw and noticed two rainbows and had this euphoric moment of wonder, this sense of enchantment? What does it mean?" What would you say to Paul? How would you respond? What would your answer be? Story two. Paul Grashan, different than Paul Vasquez, Paul Grashan is working in Chicago in a suburb called Arlington Heights, and he had just started dating a woman named Esther. They'd been on about 8 dates or so. And Paul, he was left wondering if maybe it was time for them to take their relationship to the next level. Maybe he should ask Esther about making the relationship, well, maybe they could go steady or whatever you call it these days. So he heads to his favorite deli for lunch to think about this question. And he buys a sandwich there that costs $6, and he pulls his wallet out. He pulls out a $5 and he pulls out a $1. And as he's about to hand the $1 bill over to the cashier, he notices something. He notices something. The $1 bill he's about to hand to the cashier has the name Esther written on it. Quickly, he takes back the one that he handed to the cashier. He gives her a different dollar bill. But while he's eating his lunch, he looks at the dollar bill with the name Esther written on it and wonders, what does this mean? And over lunch, as he's thinking about this, he decides, yes, he wants to get more serious with Esther. So he decides that he's going to ask her to go steady with him in this sort of funny way. He decides he's going to frame this $1 bill with the name Esther on it and give it to his girlfriend Esther on their next date. So that's what he does. The next date, he asks her to go steady with him and presents Esther with this $1 bill. Now, Esther agrees to get more serious, to go steady, whatever you want to call it. but the dollar bill thing seems to weird her out. She doesn't really react at all. All she says to Paul is this: remind me to tell you something later. Well, the couple moves on and they forget about it. They get more serious, they get engaged, they move in together, eventually they get married. And so now it's years later after this incident and they had just moved into a new apartment, and while they're unpacking all their boxes, Paul discovers the frame with the dollar bill that he had given Esther on their date. And so he asks his wife, "Hey, remember you were going to tell me something about this?" And that's when Esther tells her husband this: "When I was 19, I was a cashier working in a coffee shop in downtown Chicago, and I was dating someone and I just wasn't happy with him. And I just thought, how do people know who the right person that they're meant to be with? How do they know who that is? I said, you know what? I'm not going to worry about that. I'm just going to put my name on this dollar bill, and the guy that gets this dollar bill is going to be the guy that asked me to marry him. When Paul handed me that frame, I knew that we were going to be married, but I didn't want to freak him out at the time." This random dollar bill Esther writes her name on years before and sends out into the world as a sign of who she should marry one day, it comes back to her right when this Paul guy is about to ask her to get more serious about the relationship. Now, what do you do with that? What does it mean? Does it mean anything? I mean, this is a true story. Paul and Esther have now been married for 18 years. And Paul would go on to say this in an interview: "I don't read too much into almost anything. I just kind of move forward. And then after she told me, I think I went through all the normal stages of whatever. And I just thought, what does this mean for us? Is there some sort of bigger thing that we're not seeing here?" So let me ask you, how would you respond to this couple? If Paul and Esther were here with us or in front of you, how would you answer them if they asked what it meant for them as a couple to have this crazy dollar bill story? How would you respond? Story three. It's August of 2001, and Elise O'Kane, a United Airlines flight attendant, she signs up as she always does to work her usual flight duties from Boston to Los Angeles in September. But she accidentally enters an incorrect code into the airline's computer system, and she's assigned a different schedule than she normally works, which is no big deal. But when she noticed the error, she tried to swap flights back to her normal work schedule, her normal routine with the other flight attendants. And she was able to successfully rebook all of her flights for the month of September, except for one. She couldn't get back onto her Tuesday, September 11th flight, flight 175, the Boston to Los Angeles trip that she always worked. She even tried one more time to correct the error the night before the flight, but while she was requesting the swap on her airline system, the system froze. And by the time her process finally went through, she'd missed the airline's deadline to be on that flight by 1 minute. 1 minute. Instead, she was bumped back to her previous flight, flying Boston to Denver instead of Los Angeles. The next morning, Tuesday, September 11th, she's out on her plane in a long line of planes, taxiing, waiting on the runway to take off. Her plane is in this long line waiting for them to go. And the plane directly in front of hers was American Airlines Flight 11, which crashed into the World Trade Center's North Tower. And then the flight she was on took off for Denver, while the plane directly behind her, the one that would take off next, the one she had missed getting on, United Flight 175, which ended up striking the World Trade Center's South Tower. Her entire schedule had been messed up, but when she noticed the error and tried to change it, the one flight she couldn't get back on was that flight, Flight 175, the one that crashes into the World Trade Center. And when she recalled the seemingly random events leading up to her missing that flight, she was left with this big question: what does this mean? All Elise could tell was that through some random errors in a computer system freezing on her for 1 minute, she had escaped a doomed flight, and she couldn't shake the question, what does this mean? So final question for you. If Elise was here with us this morning, how would you respond? If she asked you what it meant that she missed a doomed flight because of some errors and by 1 minute, what would you say? What does it mean? Does it mean anything? Let's bring these three stories together. You see, does Paul noticing these rainbows and being caught up in a moment of wonder, does it mean anything? Like, would you say to Paul, well, Paul, there's a perfectly natural explanation for why two rainbows would show up on your front lawn there. To be honest, Paul, there is no meaning. There's no meaning to you seeing and being moved by the rainbows. Or maybe you go the other way. Maybe it's like, Paul, God made those rainbows appear in front of you to remind you that God has a plan for you. God loves you. The meaning of the rainbow experience is that God wanted to reveal himself to you. I mean, which way do you go? What is the meaning? Is there one? Or what about the couple with the dollar bill? I mean, would you say to them, well, though the odds are rather remote, it's not impossible for that dollar bill to have ended up in Paul's hands at the exact time and moment he was thinking about getting more serious with you. So while it might seem significant, Paul and Esther, finding that dollar bill is actually completely meaningless. Or do you go the other way and say, clearly, Paul and Esther are soulmates and the universe was trying to show them that. The universe was clearly making it obvious by having that $1 bill show up in Paul's hands. I mean, where do you go with that? What is the meaning? Is there one? Or what about Elise and her missing this doomed flight? I mean, how do you explain it? Do you say to her, well, scheduling errors and computers freeze all the time. So the fact that it happened to you doesn't really mean anything. It just means you got lucky. Or do you go the other way and say, you know, clearly this means, Elise, that God has a special plan for you. You're meant to do something special in the world. I mean, which way do you go with these stories? What is the meaning? Is there one? Now, honestly, consider how you would respond to these people, because your response to them will tell you a whole lot about how you see the world. But what would you say? Double Rainbow Guy, Paul and Esther, Elise O'Kane. You all asked what it meant. My response is this. What would it be? I mean, what does it mean to have two full rainbows show up in your front yard? What does it mean to discover a dollar bill with your girlfriend's name on it? What does it mean to miss the doomed flight you normally work on every single week? What does it mean? And what about us and our experiences? What does it mean to encounter glimpses of something more? What does it mean to find yourself awed and in wonder? What does it mean to, say, have a song move you so deeply that you can't really fully describe or explain it? What does it mean to look at your children sleeping at night and feel a sense of love that's entirely beyond you? What does it mean to hold the hand of another person and feel like you want to give them your entire life? What does it mean to come away from a book or movie so moved that it brings you to tears? What does it mean to experience this incredible phenomena, something that feels like more? What does it all mean? Well, I want to share with you a preliminary answer this morning from my perspective. If Rainbow Guy or Paul and Esther or Elise were standing here in front of me, if they were asking, Brad, what do our stories mean? Or if you two were to ask me, what does it mean to be moved by something? I think my response would be this. The meaning is in the noticing. That you noticed those double rainbows at all, Paul. Or that you noticed that dollar bill, Paul. Or that you noticed the circumstances leading up to your flight, at least. The meaning is that you noticed those things at all. The meaning to all of these stories is someone noticing something. The meaning is in the noticing. You see, to wake up and notice the startling, profound, mysterious nature of this strange world we live in is the meaning. To be awakened to something more is the point, the meaning, because when our eyes are open to the possibility of something more, something beyond our five senses, something beyond, something sacred, magical, enchanted, that itself to me is the meaning. to have eyes that notice it all, because it means we are awake to the profound mystery and magic that it is to be alive. Thomas Merton writes this: "Life is this simple. We are living in a world that is absolutely transparent, and God is shining through it all the time. This is not just a fable or a nice story. It is true. If we abandon ourselves to God and forget ourselves, we see it sometimes, and we see it maybe frequently. God manifests himself everywhere and in everything, in people and in things and in nature and in events. It becomes very obvious that he is everywhere and in everything, and we cannot be without him. You cannot be without God. It's impossible. It's simply impossible. The only thing is that we don't see it." Or as Andrew Root writes, "In the modern era, our attention has been drawn away from what our ancestors thought was obvious, that a personal God acts and moves in the world. Some would say this movement represents liberation. We've put aside an untenable belief. Instead, what we've acquired is a unique observation blindness. It's not that we've given up an untenable belief, but that our secular age has drawn our attention away from divine action and towards something else. New forms of attention make us unable to see what was once obvious." You know, so often we think of faith as a matter of belief, but as Merton and Root point out here, perhaps faith is actually a matter of perception. I don't think faith is forcing yourself to believe in unbelievable things. Faith is overcoming attentional blindness. It's the recovering of the capacity to see and experience God in the world. And you know, this is wonderfully illustrated in the story of Moses encountering the burning bush. And of course, we know in the story, after fleeing Egypt, Moses is doing what he always does. He's shepherding some sheep. But while there, in the middle of the desert near Mount Horeb, Moses notices something. Something strange, a bush that is on fire, but it's not burning up. This is how the story plays out. "Now Moses was pasturing the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the west side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. The angel of the Lord appeared to him in a blazing fire from the midst of a bush, and he looked, and behold, the bush was burning with fire, yet the bush was not consumed. So Moses said, 'I must turn aside now and see this marvelous sight, why the bush is not burned up.'" Noticing something mysterious, something unusual, Moses decides that he must turn aside and see this marvelous sight. I love that line. He notices something marvelous and decides to give it his attention. And you know, this is the key for me. Moses had to notice and then give this strange thing his attention, his eyes. And I think this is what it means, I believe, to encounter God. We need to learn to pay attention, retrain our eyes to see. Marilyn Robinson says this: "Wherever you turn your eyes, the world can shine like transfiguration. You don't have to bring a thing to it except a little willingness to see." Or the Christian mystic Simone Weil said, "Attention is the only faculty of the soul that gives access to God." So with that, one final story. But this time, this isn't someone else's story. This is your story. And I'm borrowing this idea. I came across it recently from actually a number of people. It's kind of weird. From Rob Bell, John Mark McMillan, also the Watchmen comic. And I want to share with you this story because it's your story. And as I do, I want you to ask yourself the same question we've been asking all morning. What does it mean? You see, it starts this way. Most of our universe is a void of nothingness. In every direction, for millions and billions of light years away, there's nothing, and yet, here you are. I mean, have you considered how curious that is? Did you know that finding a double rainbow in the sky, or a dollar bill with your girlfriend's name on it, or escaping a doomed 9/11 flight by error and randomness, or finding a burning bush in the wilderness, did you know that none of these are as inexplicable and as mysterious as the fact that you're alive? I mean, consider this. If you Google the words odds of being alive What you will find at the top of your search is work by Dr. Ali Binazar, and he has strived to answer this question. And as it turns out, the chances of you existing at all are beyond absurd. You shouldn't be here. Dr. Ali Binazar illustrates the extremely unlikely chain of events that would have to occur in order for you to be born. He gives this example. Imagine there was one life preserver thrown somewhere in some ocean, and there is exactly one turtle in all of these oceans swimming underwater somewhere. The probability that you came about and exist today is the same as that turtle sticking its head out of the water in the middle of that life preserver on one try. That's wild. I mean, in fact, Dr. Banazar has actually crunched the numbers to showcase how absurdly unlikely it is that you exist. The path begins here with the odds of your dad meeting your mom, which is about 1 in 20,000. That's multiplied by the chances of them staying together long enough to have kids together, about 1 in 2,000. But then things get even more unlikely, because here's the thing. You got here when your parents had sex. Now, during sex, your father did his part by contributing or sending forth, you could say, between 40 million and 1.2 billion sperms. Guess it depends on the evening circumstances. However, that was his part. Now, each of these millions or billions of sperm, every single one of them is unique and not entirely the same as any other. And each of these millions of sperm were unique because of the way their DNA they inherited is shuffled in each one. And so if any other of the millions or billions of sperm had reached your mother's egg instead of the one that created you, well, you wouldn't be here. Some sort of bizarre sibling of yours would be here instead, but no, you won the sperm lottery. Millions of other potential lives didn't happen, but you did because one specific sperm out of millions meets one specific egg from your mother, meeting at one particular time, one particular month, and they come together to create you. The probability of you existing at all, according to Binazar, is 1 in 10 to the 2,685,000th power. Just so we're clear what that means, the odds of you being here are 1 in 10 followed by 2,685,000 zeros. Binazar concludes the probability of you being here is essentially zero. You being alive is way more mysterious than a double rainbow or a dollar bill or missing some doomed flight. So what does that mean? I mean, consider Dr. Manhattan from the comic series The Watchmen. Now, he delivers a speech in one of the comics called Dr. Manhattan's Thermodynamic Miracle. And in this particular scene, Dr. Manhattan is dialoguing with a woman who feels that her life is meaningless. And Dr. Manhattan shares that he used to feel the same way, that life is meaningless, but he changed his mind. And when he's asked why, he states this to Lori, the woman who he is speaking with. This is what he says. Thermodynamic miracles, events with odds against so astronomical they're effectively impossible, like oxygen spontaneously becoming gold. I long to observe such a thing. And yet, in each human coupling, 1,000 million sperm vie for a single egg. Multiply those odds by countless generations against the odds of you, of your ancestors being alive, meeting, siring this precise son, that exact daughter. Until your mother loves a man she has every reason to hate, and of that union, of the 1,000 million sperm competing for fertilization, it was you, only you, that emerged. To distill so specific a form from that chaos of improbability is like turning air to gold. That is the crowning unlikelihood, the thermodynamic miracle. And Lori, of course, responds to Dr. Manhattan, well, wait, of course, but if that's true, if my birth is a thermodynamic miracle, I mean, you could say that about anybody in the world. And Dr. Manhattan responds again with this, yes, anybody in the world. But the world is so full of people, so crowded with these miracles that they become commonplace and we forget. I forget. We gaze continually at the world and it grows dull in our perceptions, yet seen from another vantage point, as if new, it may still take the breath away. You are life, rarer than a cork and unpredictable beyond dreams, the clay in which the forces that shape all things leave their fingerprints most clearly. Stories of mysterious events or coincidences leave us wondering, what might that mean? But the most mysterious thing in the world is actually you and me and all of us. I mean, when you consider the odds of existing at all, well, it's clear none of us are common. None of us are insignificant. Stacked against those odds, well, some of us folk might even call that being here a miracle. And here's the crux of what I want to get at. Now that you know this, now that you've noticed just how absurdly impossible and mysterious it is that you or I are even here, let me ask you a question about your story. What does it mean? What does it mean that you won the cosmic lottery? What does it mean that you being alive is far more phenomenal than someone seeing a double rainbow or finding a dollar bill that their girlfriend had written her name on or somebody missing a doomed flight? What does it mean? Some of us might dare to say that stories like the ones we heard this morning maybe point to something more, something mysterious, perhaps even miraculous, but the truth is, you being here is far more mysterious and miraculous than any story we have heard. So what does it mean? What are you going to do with the miracle that is you? The truth is, there's a whole lot of pain and suffering in this world, so much so that it would be easy and or hard to fault a person for living a life of bitterness or for just disengaging entirely. But maybe there's a better way to look at all of this. I like how John Mark McMillan says this: I understand life is painful for everyone, and unfortunately more painful for some. But you've got to know that even pain is a privilege reserved only for those precious few souls who ever get to actually exist. Only living things hurt. And unlike most of the universe, you're alive. So with this in mind, and without ignoring the suffering of the world, I implore you to be awake. Be awake inside the precious, glorious, miraculous, even painful dream that is your life. Awake. Be awake. Because you see, the meaning is in the noticing. When we wake up and notice how profoundly mysterious and miraculous our world is, how mysterious and miraculous our own existence is, then a whole new world is opened up to us. The world can become more enchanted, a more magical and haunted place to live in. Noticing that, noticing it, is the meaning. And when we do, what we discover is that noticing it actually comes with something attached to it. But for us to get to that, we're going to have to turn our attention to a story about a goat and a cow. But that's for next week, friends. For now, for this morning, as John Mark McMillan says, I implore you to be awake. Be awake inside the precious, glorious, miraculous, even painful dream that is your life. And why? Because the meaning is in the noticing.